Like Paul said one time, they got a fuss over baptism. Paul said, well, I'm glad I didn't baptize too many of you. He said, the Lord didn't send me to baptize, but preach the gospel. And the Lord didn't send me to take offerings. He just sent me to preach about it. Paul just preached about baptizing. Somebody else had done it. It never has been my lot to receive offerings. But I'll tell you what, it's my lot to tell you that unless you give to God, you're going to lose your soul. I think about what Solomon said in the book of Proverbs. The king's wrath is as the roaring of a lion, but his favor is as dew upon the grass. I sure want to find his favor, don't you? Somebody would say, I could just enjoy church so much if they just wouldn't say nothing about doing something. But when they talk about finance, it really bothers me. It don't bother you near as much as it does these other people. When the banker talks about finance and all the rest of them and paying the bills, keeping the lights on. You know, a lot of people, they feel like that if they drop their pennies in the church and have a penny march, you know, that's all they have to do. And I thank God for the penny march. A lot of times that's the only money they got to, or that is about all they ever got to feed the little children with, you know, in some churches. But to me, a penny march is abomination in the sight of God. Now, I'm telling you the truth. It's abomination in the sight of God to have a penny march. Now, if you're having it like they started out for the little children, that's something. But when grown-ups go to marching around to drop a penny in something instead of a dollar or $10 or $1,000, then I tell you there's something wrong with them. You know, you can say something about giving to God and somebody will say, man, I gave $10 to God. But that old junky rattle trap he calls a car, he probably put $3,000 in it at the least. And then no telling how much more he spent on it. And yet it's horrible to think about feeding a little hungry tummy or helping somebody that's starving to death. I've even heard them, you know, they'll say, well, I would send something overseas, but, you know, it cost us more than it's worth. Now, isn't that something? Somebody is starving to death and it costs us more than it's worth. Let me tell you something. If I was starving to death or my little children were starving to death or you or your little children were starving to death, if a biscuit was $10,000 a pinch and you paid for every pinch to get it to me, it wouldn't be too much. I can assure you, if your tummy was starving, it wouldn't be too much and you wouldn't consider it too much. Brother, it's not too much to help a starving child. If I paid 10 times what a biscuit would cost to make it in America, if I can feed that little stomach over there, it ain't too much. You know, we get beside ourselves and we look at things wrong. What we got to do is consider the cause. A lot of people feel like the church ought not to have anything and that the brethren ought not to plead the cause and the minister ought not to plead the cause. But folks, it takes a lot of money to burn lights. Did you know that? Here at Bethlehem, it cost us hundreds and hundreds of dollars. I'm talking about hundreds of dollars in 1 month just for the lights. Not considering the many multiplied things that go on or things that we do. I think within the last few days, just trying to be conservative, I have signed multiplied purchase requisitions that range from 15 to 100, 200, $250, $300 or whatever. And sometimes they're far more than that. They might be 400, 500, 700. And they go on up. Somebody said, well, I can't support the church. Yeah, I know that. God doesn't expect you to. I can't feed everything that's in the ocean. He doesn't expect me to. But there's one thing about it. I got some goldfish in a bowl down there. And they're relative to those that's in the river and the ocean. I have to feed them. You know, we've got a responsibility. You can't feed everybody in the world. But we can cut us off a little chunk and feed some of them. And if everybody cuts off a little chunk, and a little corner, and they'll do a little something outside of find fault and fight with an old ugly spirit. I'll guarantee you we'll get the job done. If everybody at Bethlehem shares a little bit in the load, and one brother doesn't have to do it all, or two brothers doesn't have to do it all, or two sisters doesn't have to do it all, I'll guarantee you that we'll get the job done. I thought about our little ones going over to the nursing home. I saw the pictures of them. They were so beautiful in their little dresses. And they warmed the hearts of the people so much and inspired them so much until a man that they couldn't get to walk come up out of his wheelchair and walked all over the place following them. The inspiration of God actually brought the deliverance of Christ. You know what caused that? The Bible said a merry heart doeth good like a medicine. And his heart became merry. He enjoyed that so much. That is wonderful. Oh, I know that doesn't mean something, you know, or anything to some folks. But oh, it means so much to me. It literally thrills my soul. Every time somebody gets a piece of literature into a prisoner or gets to testify to a prisoner and I have just a little tiny part in it, I thrill to it. And if I don't have a part in it, I still thrill to it. Because I've got a part in that I prayed that it would happen. God answers prayer, folks. I know that you don't believe that, but He does. He answers prayer. Not too long ago, I prayed a special prayer. I prayed to God. I said, God, do something special for the prisoners. I said, they're bound. They're in there. Do something special for the prisoners. And did you know it was after that I prayed that? I said not too long ago, it's quite a while ago now. After that, they started a system of furlough, of letting them come home and doing something for them. I prayed that God would do that around the world. And you know, when we prayed that God would let the prisoners out from over yonder, God spoke to me and said, I'll bring them home, son, and not, I won't let nothing happen to them. God brought them home, like He said. We had to pray again and again, night after night, because the devil would lock tighter and tighter. Every time God would go to let them loose or something would happen, it looked like He was going to let them loose, and the devil would rise up and he'd get even harder on them. But God did what He said. And night before last it was, you know, I had prayed here a while back concerning the killing of those children in Atlanta. It bothered me because it couldn't seem to get it stopped. So I prayed and I prayed, and then I come and I told the brethren, I said, the Lord is going to stop it and they're going to catch him. Well, sure enough, they caught somebody. A little while, they turned them loose. The killings went on. I went back and prayed again, and I said, God's going to get him this time. So they got somebody, and they kept him for about 3 months. Having the trial. During that period of time, the letter stopped. The sequence of killing stopped. Not at any other time had there been such an interval in the killing since it had started, that continuous thing. Night before last, I went to God and prayed. I said, God, they've had a riffraff about this thing ever since they picked the man up. I said, it's this way and that way, this way and that way. And nobody knows anything. And I've stayed out of it other than what I ask you to do, Lord, in bringing the man to justice or whatever. I said, but tonight I'm going to pray and I'm going to ask you to intervene in that court matter. And I want you, Lord, if that man is innocent, if that's the way it is, and that's what they say, I want the man turned loose. I said, but otherwise, I said, you know the heart of mankind. And if that man goes loose, if he's a killer, then the killings will continue. I said, now I want you to do something about it. The next day they convicted him. Sentenced him. Now, see, I feel this way. You say, well, the man was innocent. Maybe he was. That's between him and God to decide, the jury, whatever you think, what you will in your heart. Everybody thinks what they will. But there's one thing I do know. The Bible said that God creates the good and evil, has His way in both. And that the preparation of man's heart is from God. And if God prepared the jury's heart to convict him, whether innocent or whatever, God had a reason. God had a reason. It is a true fact that things did stop during the time that they had the man. I wanted to get into a few things this morning, but I don't know where to start or not, because I can tell that it's cool out there. It's cool up here, and I know that it's cool out there, and I know that a lot of you folks are not like folks that go to a football game, and you're not going to get too enthused over what I say if it's cool. So I don't know whether we'll get into the revelation or not. We talk to you for a few minutes and exhort you. And then if the Lord sees fit to get into the revelation, he'll prepare my heart to do so. I wanted to get into it this past Friday night because there's a few little thoughts that I wanted to drop or leave with you that would have been beneficial to you. I wish that we had the enthusiasm concerning God's word so much as they that have the enthusiasm concerning the world. I wish that we were as enthused and eager. The Bible said the children of the world in their generation, they're wiser than the children of light. They are wiser to the extent they get more enthused over something. And they build it up and they work and they support it. And football games and whatever can campaign and come even to the homes of religious people and societies and all these things. And these people that won't give nothing to the church or do nothing for the church, they will contribute to those corrupt things. And of course, that's where their treasure is. That's where their heart is. It's in the world. And they're giving their treasures, and God ordained that it be that way, that he might not be in debt to them in the day of judgment, that he will owe them nothing, and that they can't put their finger on God for nothing. And God ordained that he take his few that's interested in heaven, even those that are in poverty, and provide for them, that they might, like Gideon's few, make provisions for God in God's house, that all the glory might go to Christ in the day of the judgment. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. All right. The Lord knows what he's doing. We'll just talk to you a little bit, and let's read from the 51st chapter of Isaiah. We've read from this a number of times, but the Lord keeps bringing us back to it. The reason I believe that he keeps bringing us back to it is because that hour is upon us. Chapter 51, hearken to me, ye that follow after righteousness. I wonder if we've got anybody this morning that's following after righteousness. Now, he's not just talking to church members. He's not talking to social groups or lodges. He's not just speaking to people. But he said, hearken to me, ye that follow after righteousness. Ye that seek the Lord, look unto the rock whence ye are hewn, and to the hole of the pit whence ye are digged. Well, that is, look unto Calvary. Look unto Calvary, he says. He's saying here, look unto Calvary. For the Bible called him the rock of God. Who is a rock but our God? Look unto Calvary. And he said, look toward the grave that I was brought up from, the resurrection from the dead. Look at the pit that I lay in, that I came forth from. For when I resurrected, you resurrected with me. When I came forth, you came forth too. And he said, look unto the rock whence ye are hewn, and to the hole of the pit whence ye are digged. Well, that is, if you are a chip off the old block, as we say, if you're a member of the body of Jesus Christ, look unto Abraham, your father, and unto Sarah that bare you. That is, look unto Abraham as the father of the faithful in the spiritual sense. And look unto Sarah, who is referred to as New Jerusalem. The Bible calls her the mother of us all. That is in the spiritual. For I called him alone and blessed him and increased him. For the Lord shall comfort Zion. He will comfort all her waste places. And he will make her wilderness like Eden, That is your body that's all overgrown with the nettles. That is to say, your body, which has physical conflict and the mental pressures and all the problems that you encounter concerning your physical being and your surroundings. He says to you, he said, I will make her desolate like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving in the voice of melody. That is, serving God is joy, peace, and righteousness. And the Bible teaches that we are to make melody in our heart unto the Lord. Hearken unto me, my people, and give ear unto me, O my nation, for a law shall proceed from me, and I will make my judgment to rest for a light of the people. My righteousness is near, my salvation is gone forth, and mine arms shall judge the people. The isles shall wait upon me, and on mine arms shall they trust. That is, the Lord is telling us here that the righteousness of God is by faith through Jesus Christ that he gave in the behalf of our sins at Calvary. He says his own arm hath wrought salvation. He said, lift up your eyes to the heavens. That is to say, we are not just to look up to the stars, or we're not to raise our natural eyes to behold the moon and the sun, but we are to take our spiritual eyes, having eyes of understanding. That is, that our eyes of understanding should be enlightened, that we might be able to comprehend the heights, the depths, and the width. That is, in our spiritual comprehension, with our spiritual eyes, we look to the spiritual things of God, and we behold through the understanding of Christ the true heavens, and we look unto the true heavens from where cometh our nourishment. So he says here, lift up your eyes to the heavens and look upon the earth beneath, for the heavens shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment, and they that dwell therein shall die in like manner. But my salvation shall be forever, and my righteousness shall not be abolished. This that we see with our natural eye, he said, would pass away, for heaven and earth shall pass away. But my words shall not pass away. That is to say, after the millennium in the brightness, or with the brightness of the coming of the Ancient of Days, Peter said that the very heavens being on fire shall melt with fervent heat, that there won't be any heavens there. And he said the earth would pass away, wherein the Bible said there shall be a new heaven and a new earth. And this is the heaven that we look to. This is the heaven that we behold, is the new heaven and the new earth. Having passed from death unto life and having been translated into a new world, we behold a new heavens and a new earth. For the Bible said, for we look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. But with your natural eyes, he said, as you see this pass away, this heaven pass away, and the heavens vanish away, and the earth wax old like a garment, he said, my salvation will continue forever. My righteousness shall not be abolished. I won't do away with it. Hearken unto me, ye that know righteousness, the people in whose heart is my law. Fear ye not the reproach of men, neither be ye afraid of their revilings. For the moth shall eat them up like a garment, and the worm shall eat them like wool. But my righteousness shall be forever, and my salvation from generation to generation. Or again we say, the worm, we use the terms, where the fire is not quenched, and the worm dieth not. That is to say, the worm, the generation of vipers, that is, in the human body, death will continue. That is, life, rather than life, existence, or life, as we call it, will go on and go on. Yet death will continue. There'll be a continuation of death. ever dying and never dead. Ever dying and never dead. The worm dieth not. And yet death continues because you are in a condition of death. And the worm, Lucifer, the evil spirit, the serpent, that is to say, that which infests the body. I was bringing out a little revelation in the early morning concerning that which inhabits the body. The worm dieth not. God said to Jacob, thy worm I will help thee. And John referred to the generation as a generation of worms. Jesus called the generations that do not know Christ, that do not know God, he called them a worm, a generation of vipers. For the moth shall eat them up like a garment, and the worm shall eat them like wool, but my righteousness shall be forever, and my salvation from generation to generation. Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of the Lord. Awake as in the ancient days in the generation of old. Art thou not it that hath cut Rahab and wounded the dragon? Art thou not it which hath dried the sea, the waters of the great deep that hath made the depths of the sea a way for the ransomed to pass over? Therefore the redeemed of the Lord shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and mourning shall flee away. You know, a lot of times you sit here in the church uncomfortable. We wonder why that we don't have the convenience here. We could put it in, but we wonder why that we don't have the convenience here. The reason is that we might have a cross, and that God might let us suffer a little discomfort to prove people, to see who is really the ones that love him and the ones that will work with him, and to try people to see who hath enough love of God to want to put heat into the sanctuary, or that wants to make God's house comfortable. He does these things to try us, that every one of us might be tried, that we might feel the sting, and that we might feel the discomforts, and that we might know what's going on, so that we can see that we are needed, and that our negligence, that God is seeing it, and that everyone has an opportunity to do something when many say they don't know what to do. God lets these things happen. You know, God has the way of doing things. Isn't that right? Like the little story I heard the other day of a man going to a hospital, a primitive place that they had to care for people. He was a mumbler and a grumbler and a complainer. All he did was complain. Everywhere he went, he complained. In the hospital, he complained because the beds wasn't right and the clothing wasn't right and there wasn't enough nurses and whatever to take care of him the way he wanted to be taken care of. Yet he was exceedingly rich. He was a great millionaire, but he didn't offer to do anything about it. He just grumbled and mumbled. But God had sent him there. See, God had sent him there for that purpose, so that he could feel some of the discomforts or be taken by some of the inconveniences, that he might have the feeling of their infirmities. Jesus came down into this world for one reason, and that reason was so that he could feel the infirmities. Being the great millionaire of heaven, as we would say, that great, rich, exceedingly rich one, he came down into the world that he might feel the infirmities of the weak, that he might know how to share his riches, and that he might know those that was the right kind of people to share the riches with. The Bible said, humble thyself, make sure of thy friend. So Jesus didn't bring his wealth with him. He didn't bring his riches with him, nor did he use his power to any selfish advantage. But he came down as a pauper, went into a manger, because he knew that nobody would care about him.
as a babe born in a manger. The rich doesn't care about the poor. The rich doesn't care about them that are starving to death and them that are hungry. You say, but I disagree with you, Brother Pike. I think they do. No, I disagree with you. They definitely do not. You say, but how can you say that? Because they wouldn't be rich if they did. There's too many hungry people. The Bible said, as it is written, he that gathered much, that is the rich, had nothing left over. And he that gathered little had no lack. That is the ones that's hungry. That's why the Bible said, and your gold is cankered. And in the latter times, you'll throw it to the bats and cry for the rocks and mountains to fall upon you. Said, for it's eaten your flesh. Your garments are moth-eaten, and the worms will eat you up. Devils and demons have literally devoured the people. Their garments, which is their body, that clothe their spiritual being, their inner man, their garment is eaten up. It's rotten, it's deteriorated. Cancer, diseases, it's rotten, it's gone. And God won't restore their body because they used their life the way they wanted to in riotous living. They were drunken off of the cares of life through this dark world. They've done the hideous and freakish things that's contrary to the nature of Jesus Christ. They've not held up a standard of holiness. They've not tried to be a light. They've not shared with the needy. They've done the thing that they wanted to do, which has been being gullible and having all that they want. They spend their money for societies, on societies to make the world better so that they can enjoy it the more. They invest in things that will pay them back. They loan to them of whom they hope to receive. They charge interest on every dollar that the poor man gets. And their interest is so great that the poor man is pressed out of measure. It is a continual thing with them that they oppress the poor man. And the Bible said they bring you before the mercy seat and they blaspheme the name of Jesus. And they make a joke of religion. And they blaspheme that worthy name by which you're called. And yet they're just as religious as Cain. So then, when we realize these things and we see the circumstantial environment that we're caught in this world, we should follow after Christ the more. We should withdraw from the world and we should leave that out there. As I said, the little story went on that the man grumbled and he mumbled. But there was a young lady that loved God. Her dad also in his lifetime had left a testimony according to the little story. Something that had touched the millionaire, but he was still hard. He wouldn't do anything. But her compassion, her concern, according to the story, it finally broke him down. Finally, his mumbling and grumbling passed on. And the realization of helping others and doing something for the needy began to strike his heart. And as the story stated, he eventually gave the money to do something for the place that was in such bad shape that people there who had dedicated their lives to helping people might have some means of doing more. You know, that's what you need to do. That's what you need to do if you come to Bethlehem and you see there's some inconvenience here. Then don't look on the inconvenience. Don't mumble and grumble. The Bible said, do all things without murmuring. Just recognize your shortcomings because you're the one that God wanted to do something about it. Look around you and think it over. Don't murmur about the inconvenience. Remember there was other people that during cold days that gave their hours of hard labor here in the ice and the snow. And sometimes in the hot, hot day, the heat of the day, to build these walls and to provide what there already is. You just think of it like this. You say, I think I'll take up where they left off. And they've done their part, now let me do my part. Like the song says, I'm so glad that I can say I'm one of them. Let me unite together with them, and let me put my efforts with them, that I also may have a reward in the world to come. And if all of the conveniences are here, so that you are convenient and everything is fine for you, then the thing you need to do is consider our world evangelism and our world outreach. Because in a lot of places, it's not too convenient for folks. And folks are hungry and they need our help. And if we gathered much, then we shouldn't have anything left over. We should utilize all that we have for God. Did you know, have you ever stopped to think that Brother Pike could have built a fabulous palace out here if I wanted to? Did you know in this one building right here, some men have taken the money that I put in this building and they personally have built themselves a palace and a home? I could have done it with one building and took hundreds of thousands of dollars, invested and took millions upon millions of dollars and laid it back. But you know what would have happened to Brother Pike? I would have went to hell. Do you know what's going to happen to you? You're going to go to hell. But there's one thing about it, God being no respecter person, if Brother Pike and the brethren invested their time, took time to be holy and invested their time and their money or whatever in a project for God, then that means if God will take them to heaven for that, if you invest in it, God will also take you to heaven for that, because he's no respecter person. So then, let's be enthused about it. Let's don't murmur. Let's don't complain. Let's don't wait till life chokes till death chokes our very life out of us. Let's don't wait till we breathe our last breath. And then after we're dead and departed from this world, you know, after we're gone, be able to do nothing. Be cut off to where we'll be in the regions of the damned and be in the burning pits. Let's don't wait till that time. And then look back like the man did from the flames of hell and say, I wished I was over there where you're at. I wished in my lifetime that I had considered the poor and the weak. I wished I had not been a gossiper and a backbiter and I'd have used my tongue for something that is constructive rather than running my mouth all the time to tear down and to hinder. I wished I'd have used my brain for something outside of a tadpole pond. I wished that I had been something in life that would have been valuable to God, and that I'd have utilized my ability and my talent and my substance. I wish that I had used it to honor God with. You know, you can go ahead and be selfish and you can be gullible and you can take all of your time to ride and to buy and to look and to visit and be with your friends and your relatives. You can do all of that, and after a while your time's going to be gone. And then when you get old and depleted and you get decrepit, you know, and you can't do nothing for God then, not anything at all for God, you turn and say, oh, Jesus, I love you. You're the desire of my heart, Jesus. Oh, you're the desire of my heart. I know I haven't done anything, didn't care for you. And if I had my youth back, wouldn't care for you no more. But Lord, in that I'm old and ready to die, I trust that you won't take nothing from me. Lord, but give me everything you got as I cross over the river. What a foolish man and woman. What a foolish person. The Bible said, remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth. Somebody would say, but Brother Pike, you don't understand. I'm going to leave my fortune. I'm going to leave what I've got. I'm going to leave my riches with the church. I'm going to will it to them. And let me tell you something. I want you to know again that that doesn't belong to you after you're dead. Somebody would say, but Brother Pike, it belongs to me. Oh no, it doesn't belong to you. At death, it doesn't belong to you. See, God only made you a steward over it while you're living in this world. And it is not yours to will to anybody. Not anybody. When you're dead, it's not yours. You understand what I'm saying? Somebody would say, well, I don't see it like that. All right, let's look at it like this, and this will help you to see. If it was a Christian, it would all belong to them. Though they would be what you call dead, it would still belong to them because a Christian cannot die. Therefore, the Bible said, he that overcometh, he shall inherit all things. And a Christian cannot die. They go to sleep to wake up on the other side to still own not only what they had that they honored God with, but to own all things and to possess all things and to rule over all things. But see, you're dead. You're gone. If you are a sinner, you're dead. You're cut off from God. You don't own anything else. You'll never have anything else. To will something to God, somebody would say, but Brother Pike, what if it's a Christian and then they will it to God? Brother, let me tell you something. If they're a real, genuine Christian, they won't have anything left to will to God as long as there's a hungry person. Somebody say amen or oh me. They won't have anything to will. They'll give all that they've got during this lifetime to God. They won't keep back one dime of it. Not one dime of it will they keep back. They'll give everything that they've got to God and to the service of God. Somebody would say, well, Brother Pike, I know people that's got money and I know they love the Lord. If you'll check up if they really love God, if they've got anything at all, they're using that every day for the glory of God. If they've got a business, they're using it for the glory of God. If they've got money in the bank, they're using it as an overhead to operate the business, that they may give more to God than what it would be if they took their capital. You can be sure a Christian will do that. Honor the Lord with thy substance. The barns will be filled with plenty, and the presses will burst out with new wine, and you won't go lacking, and you won't lose anything. You won't lose anything at all. But remember, when you talk about willing something to God, now I know there's a lot of gullible evangelists that they wouldn't talk like I'm talking. You know, I could talk a different way, and I could have people all over the different parts of the world willing their substance to me. I could set me up a little office and everything. I've already been approached about it. I had one of the great outstanding people that said, Brother Pike, I know how it works. I'm acquainted with it. I know where it's at, where it goes on. And I can put you in touch with it right off. And all you can do is just set this thing up. It'd be no trouble. And you get all of those people's fortunes. So see, some gullible people wouldn't talk like I'm talking. But I'm not after their fortunes. I'd go about this thing different if I was. I'd do the same thing some of those gullible evangelists are doing, so that I could add iniquity to iniquity. But they've got to answer to God. See, they deceive those people. The Bible said, of this kind are they that creep into houses and lead silly women astray. Women that are laden with divers lust. Said they deceive them and they lead them astray and they take their fortunes when they don't have anything to offer them. The Bible said, while they themselves promise these people liberty, they themselves are in bondage, or they are children of corruption. So see, they're not doing anything but being gullible, using their little gimmicks as they've always done to build an empire. And God frowns on it and God hates it. So then I tell you the truth. It doesn't matter how much you want to will something to God. If you are a sinner, you don't have anything to will to God. It's not yours. When you leave this world, it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the remaining generation. It belongs to the people that are here. Whether you will it or don't will it, it still belongs to them that's after you. You don't have to make out a will. Now they have got a little law system that turns it where they want it to go. And if you'll get a little piece of paper and get a lawyer, you can turn some of it to some of your gullible children so that they can use it up in the frolics of the world. You can do that. But in all reality, they're going to do with it what they want to when you're gone and you can't do nothing about it. But here's the thing, folks. God isn't going to play games with people. It is a true fact that God isn't going to play games with you. God is expecting me to preach the gospel. He didn't tell me to come and entice people and to try to soothe people and say things that would tickle the people's ears. He said, you go preach the gospel. You know what the gospel is? The word of God. It's foolishness to some people, but the Bible said it's the power of God unto salvation to us that believe in it. So then, God isn't going to play games with some millionaires or some celebrities just because they have money. God doesn't care about that. They wouldn't have any money if God had not given it to them. Somebody would say, but Brother Pike, why doesn't God take that money and give it to us? We're the ones that's trying to do His will. Brother and sister, let me tell you, God gives that to Esau because that's all that Esau is going to get. God gives that to Esau because Esau, this is Esau's world, this is Esau's life, and God created Esau. And God gives it to Esau so that Esau can be gullible and enjoy it, sin for a season. He can swallow it all down, but at the end of the way, Esau will be put into hell. The Bible said, all that forget God shall be put into hell. So then they're not going to leave anything because they don't have anything to leave. You're not going to receive anything from God because after you gullibly all of your life have used up that money to the last breath and then you know that you can't use it any longer and that you're losing it in spite of all, then at that moment you try to get into heaven by saying, well, I can't do nothing with this no more. I know I'll give it to God. Why, you're more gullible and evil than ever. Like the Bible said concerning some of the people there in the New Testament, said your heart is not right with God. You're in the gall of bitterness, the bonds of iniquity, and your heart's not right with God in that you think that you could buy your way into the kingdom of heaven and on such a hairstring sort of a deal. What do you think God is, some kind of fool? Folks, we are stewards over everything that we've got during our lifetime. Somebody would say again, but Brother Pike, suppose it was a Christian. Don't worry, there won't be no Christians around like that. There won't be no Christians around like that. You say, but some of them Christians at death, they're going to will all they've got to God at their death. What about that, Brother Pike? There won't be no Christians around like that. You mean to say that nobody at death is going to have anything that's a Christian? No, I don't mean to say that at all. As a matter of fact, at death their barns will be filled with plenty. But I mean that they've already given God everything in their lifetime. They don't have to will nothing. They might make some paper arrangement according to the laws and the foolishness of the land. They might do that to keep somebody from stealing what little is left behind from God, in that they've used it for God all of their life and tried to give to God out of what they had in as much as they had a business or something that would glorify God. But they won't be any Christians dying, willing their fortunes to God in the sense that we're speaking of. So then, what we need to do is be a steward. God doesn't care how much we have or how much we've made in our lifetime. God is interested in how much that we've got left after we share with the needy. You know how much you'll have left if you are a millionaire or a billionaire? Do you know how much you'll have left after you share with the needy? You'll be just like the widow. You will have given your living and won't be nothing left. But the Bible said, as it is written, he that gathered the billions had nothing left over. There is so many hungry people in the world. There is such a great need for the gospel of Christ that today if I had $1 billion, there would not be one dime I would be able to keep to lay up somewhere as a treasure because there's too many hungry people. Somebody would say, well, Brother Pike, what could a person do with a dime? I'll tell you as of a truth, Betty and I have seen the time when we was in our little trailer caught in some of the biggest snows that you've ever had. and caught there, and at that time I needed one dime. That's all it took at that time to fill up a little can that sat in that little trailer that held kerosene. It took one dime to put the kerosene in to keep me and my children warm. I went to the mailbox. There was no money. Nobody cared. I went to every place I knew, but nobody cared. I prayed and asked God, and God cared and gave me the heat. So then, as it is written, we need to do something about it. Nothing left over. Brother Pike doesn't believe in bank accounts. I believe that that's why God killed Jim Jones. I believe that's why God killed him. I believe that he took a bunch of people and enslaved those people. And from all of the reports, he had money in a number of banks all around the different parts of the world. And he had millions of dollars. And I believe God killed him for that reason. And you know what? I believe God will kill you for the same reason. For the Bible said, I will kill her children with death. And I will despise their image in the morning. And did you know that there are numbers of evangelists in the world today? And these evangelists have taken money to evade income tax, and they put it in the foreign fields. I have heard of some of the great Pentecostal ministers that are on the field that's been caught on the telephone when somebody else that actually worked with them faithfully for years heard them on the telephone as they gave a false name to put their money into the foreign places. Brother, sister, let me tell you something. God's eyes are throughout the earth. And His eyes are beholding the good and the evil. And He's rewarding everybody according as their work shall be. Now, He'll get you for gossiping and backbiting. Maybe those fellas don't do any gossiping and backbiting to the extent they're so busy thieving and stealing. But the same God that will make you pay for what seems to be a little thing to you, being so great to God, He'll make them pay for what seems to be a big thing to you, those that are stealing and thieving from the people. So then, we're not here to build an empire. God didn't call preachers in this world to build an empire, to get a lot of money and rob people and mistreat people. God didn't call them here for that. God didn't call them here to be some great celebrity so somebody would make a fuss over them and magnify them as a god. God called them to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And He called them to tell you the truth and to tell you that you're going to wind up in the flames of a burning pit if you don't follow after righteousness. God said, "Hearken unto me, all ye that follow after righteousness, all of ye that seek the Lord. Hear me," He said. "I have something laid in store for those that are out yonder in the world that won't listen to the voice of God. Their garments are moth-eaten in my sight, and the worms shall devour their bodies, and their souls shall sink into the black, black pit. And the heavens shall melt with fervent heat, and the earth that they cherish shall pass away. And they shall throw their substance to the bats, and cry for the rocks and the mountains to fall upon them, and to hide them from the face of the angry God that sitteth upon the throne. For the wrath of the king is like a roaring lion, but his favor is as the dewdrops of heaven." So then let us seek the favor of God. Let's seek the dewdrops of God that we may have, as the song said, dewdrops of mercy. And may we search after God, and may we share our time with God in prayer, in meditation, in going and helping others, and may we share our substance, which is our financial abilities. May we share our talents. May we share everything that we've got with God, and may we look to God to bless us and multiply our substance and fill our barns with plenty so that we can have even the more. That we can share even the more. Well, that is, the Bible said, let us labor that we might have to give. That is, providing especially for the household of faith, that there might be found in my house meat to the hungry. All right, we could go on and go on and go on. We've got your interest. The Lord Jesus has got your interest, and we could go on and preach and preach and preach. But I know that it's cold. Jesus knows that it's cold. You're uncomfortable. I say again, that'll be over. Thought it would be over this winter for sure. But somehow I just didn't feel to make no special effort to water this winter. This cold siege, God wanted us to experience this extra cold siege. It had a spiritual thing. I feel sure that the thing will terminate and it won't be this way anymore. But you know what? God has given a lot of people opportunity to experience the inconvenience of Little Bethlehem and to share in the cross of Little Bethlehem. Some of them have, some of them will, some of them will never. But there's one thing about it, beginning this year, God will take away the inconvenience of Little Bethlehem. And God will make this like a garden, and it will be blessed. So then, those that could have shared, we don't need you to come and share then. Won't be no need for your substance, and won't be no need for you to come around wanting to share, because God will have taken care of all of it. Now is the time. God will have by then given some of them abroad who has never been to Little Bethlehem and seen the inconvenience or felt the sting of the cold. He will have given those that are abroad a chance to share with Little Bethlehem. As a matter of fact, that brings something to my mind right now when I say this. Brother Cartridge was having a little interview with me yesterday, and they were having me to make a tape that he can send out to those that are abroad. And strangely enough, it says, I noticed Brother Chuck uses the terms Bethlehem and you. You know, God just brought it back to my mind that that's exactly what he is doing right now. That it will go out abroad, that Bethlehem may be related to those that are out there. And brethren, you can believe, according to some of the letters that we get, they're going to latch on to it in a great way. All right, I want you to stand with me. May God bless you that are faithful. May God have mercy on you that are not faithful. May you that are not faithful become faithful. And may you that are faithful pray even more for the unfaithful. And may you that are faithful be blessed of God in that you will do more in your faithfulness for the wonderful kingdom of Jesus Christ. Let's sing a little chorus together. Many of our people are greatly stirred. They're moved and they're greatly stirred. They are wanting to do something for Jesus and they're very sincere about it. And many of them that have not been faithful in the past are beginning to be torn all to pieces. There is a big load to carry this year, and as I say so often, I'm not expecting you to meet it. Tomorrow, I have multiplied thousands of dollars to meet. You as a whole, I happen to know, you don't have anything to meet it with. I realize that. There's a few of you that do. But I also know that you're not going to do it. How hardly shall they that have riches? I know that you're not going to do it. But they that don't have, some of them would do it if they could. And they don't have because they already have given what they did have. They had nothing left over. Whereas it doesn't mean that they are broke to the extent that God provides for them and He will give them abundantly much more. Continually, in that the little widow's meal barrel never did give out, nor the crucible never did it run dry. But I'm not speaking in respect of want. Paul said, I've coveted no man's silver or gold, and that is the truth. Because Christ is my exceeding great reward. And I have refused support for the simple reason that, as Abraham said, that nobody could point their finger and say, I've made Brother Pike rich, or I've made Abraham rich. I wanted it to be a faith. God has opened my mind to where I could have worked so many gimmicks until money
would never have even been a problem to me. Or he hath opened my mind and blessed me with substance, that I could have took that which is mine. The Bible said it's lawful for me to do what I will with that that's mine. And he raised me up and gave me the ministry and said, so shall men give into your bosom. And I'll make them come and kneel at your feet and know that I've loved you. And I could have taken that, all that I have, and I could have multiplied it. So many people wanted to use my facilities here. They wanted to use them. Even the man that sold us the Bibles out of Nashville, one of the last things he talked to me about just before he left after he sold us the Bibles, he said, Brother Pike, in essence, I would like to use your presses. He said, I would like to use your presses to print Bibles on. He said, I don't have a press like that. Others have tried to do the same thing. Before I got into this, I had opportunity as a salesman. I remember how the Lord blessed me, and even my district manager told me when I quit, he said, George, he said, you are a born salesman. Said, you're the only man on our staff that's not in the red or in our district. Whatever, it was the district manager. Now, whatever it was, he said, you're the only man that's not in the red. I said, I'm not a born salesman. I'm a preacher. I'm called to preach. I had a chance. Being a songwriter, I had a chance. I had a chance at recording, a chance at Hollywood with my songs. I had a chance. I wasn't interested in that. Today, I'm still not interested in it. And I don't like ministers that use God's way of life for a cloak of maliciousness, that uses the ministry to gain popularity through singing and the different things of the world, to commercialize off of the gospel. I don't like those ministers. I don't like their way of life. I don't like what they're doing. I don't like haughty, arrogant, rich people, or poor for that matter, that's haughty and arrogant. I don't like fault finders and gossipers and backbiters. And God said, I'm angry with the wicked every day, and I'll pursue the wicked till they perish from off of the face of the earth. I'm interested in the truth and helping somebody. I'm interested in using whatever God has given me and that which I've gotten strictly by faith so that there would be no commercial appeal. And so nobody could say, by Brother Pike's ability, he's gotten this or that. I've not used the talents and I've not used the gimmicks. I've not sold anything. I have used faith in God that God might be glorified and that nobody could say, well, I'm the one that supported that. I'm the one that done that. I'm the one that carried that. As a matter of fact, every one of you can say along with myself that if you'd have done half what you ought to have done, our project here would probably be 10 times greater. But anyway, God did it His way. He did it His way. And we want to continue to hurl the gospel around the world, to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. I invite your love and concern and prayer. And you that want to be a part of us or go with us, you can. But it's for sure, folks, like I've said here recently, we're not going to go through the foolishness we have in the past to put up with your mannerism in the sense that you are developing, you know better now. Neither is God going to put up with the foolishness of America or the world in that they are religiously indoctrinated and they know better now. God is going to destroy the whole thing because He cannot tolerate it when a man knows to do good and won't do it in that that makes him partakers of the evil. He'll never do that. Let's sing a little chorus together, and while we're singing, I want you to search your hearts.
You know, this is why Brother Pike doesn't relate to the celebrities and the rich. They've tried so hard to be a fellow with me. So hard. Even these great television artists and these great preachers, if I had a went their way, they wanted so bad in the denominations. They wanted so bad to be a fellow with me. But I rejected it. Because the Bible said, withdraw thyself from every brother that walks disorderly and have no company with them. If two walk together, they cannot be together unless they be agreed. It is a positive proof that they are agreed. That's why that they fight me like they do and why they're upset with me. That's why they did Jesus like that. The Pharisees and scribes, even Satan himself, said, if you'll just worship me or you'll follow me, I'll give you the whole world. Jesus said, it's written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shall thou serve. And the Pharisees and scribes hated him because he wouldn't join their gimmicks. Let's sing the chorus. Wonderful. Can you sing wonderful? You know, they loved Paul as long as Paul went along with them. When Paul turned against them, they hated him. They put him in prison. They beat him. Wonderful, wonderful, my Jesus is to me. He's a counselor and a prince of peace. Mighty God is he. He's saving me and keeping me from all sin and shame. Wonderful is my Redeemer, praise His name. He's wonderful, wonderful, Jesus is to me. He's a counselor and a prince of peace. Mighty God is He. He's saving me and keeping me from all sin and shame. Wonderful is my Redeemer, glory to His name. You know, while praising God, I saw Brother James slip his hand up to worship the Lord. The Bible said, I would that men everywhere lift up their hands, holy hands, hands that Christ has made holy. When you do that, He sees the nail-riven hands of Jesus hanging at Calvary. He sees you as bone of His bone and flesh of His flesh. I would that men everywhere lift up holy hands without wrath and without doubting. This morning, let's sing that again and let's lift up our hands. While we're singing this, I'm going to ask Gerald to come up here. And as he sings with you and worships God with you. All right, as Gerald worships God with you a few minutes, after that, Brother Taylor will have something to say to you. All right, let's sing it again. Can we, as Gerald comes? Wonderful, wonderful, my Jesus is to me. He's a counselor and a prince of peace. Mighty God is He. He's saving me and